Well, let me welcome back Kevin Loco here to Systematically Wild. And man, Kevin, a very excited last show we had last week, but a little bit of a downer this week.
The pen has hit the balloon, and the balloon is making farting noises all over the room as it deflates.
Well, that begs the interesting question, Kevin, before we dive too much into this particular week. We're approaching that trade deadline right now, and coming very, very quickly. And as you and I are talking here tonight, we're looking at a Minnesota team that is now fifth in the wild card standings, 8 points behind the eighth place team, which is Nashville right at this moment. Is Minnesota a seller at this point?
Yes, they are, but there's just not much that they can sell due to how many guys they've locked into long-term deals that right now are looking a little disastrous.
Yeah, that's kind of the long-term deal in hockey. I get everybody wants that. If for an athlete standpoint, you got to do it. But from management, you know, this is anything more than like 4 years, I don't get. You know, because it's like somebody's career can so rapidly decline. Kevin, we were just talking on our other show with Greg Minier, was talking about losing a step. And it just seems like in hockey, you can go from a 50-goal season to being an 18-goal scorer in like two seasons, you know, rather rapidly. And so putting that kind of money into somebody for 8-9 years just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, even these contracts they signed to Zuccarello and Goodrow and Hartman and Foligno, to me right now, they're just not making a ton of sense to me, especially when Bill Guerin is preaching wants a team that, you know, team that plays hard, but team that's a fast team, and you're locking into a lot of older players, and I don't see where the need was to do it, because these are guys that could have been valuable pieces come March 8th, and now they're all pretty much off the market.
Well, the club begins the week with a 3-2 loss at home against Carolina, then travels to Nashville where they are just stomped out 6-1. Tough loss on Saturday in St. Louis, 3-1, but return home on Sunday to beat the San Jose Sharks, who everybody beats 4-3 in that game. We were hoping for a 2-2 week, Kevin. Came away with a 1-3 showing.
You know, if they were going to go 1-3, you would have hoped that they would have either beat Nashville or St. Louis just to help their own cause in the wild card chase. But at this point, after dropping the first three, it just seems a little consolation for them to beat what you mentioned is a pretty down and out San Jose club right now.
Well, it starts off on Tuesday night. The club scores 2 goals in the first period, comes out of the first period leading by a goal as Connor Dewar and Jonas Brodin score, 8th of the season for Dewar, 6th of the season for Brodin. Jordan Staal gets his 8th goal for Carolina. And was it him or one of his brothers that was in Iowa a couple of years ago?
It'd be Eric Staal.
Eric Staal, yes, you're right. Carolina, though, gets a goal in the second and in the third period to come away with a 3-2 victory. A little bit of a disappointing performance, obviously, as you want to come away with a win on home ice. Philip Gustafson played pretty well, stopped 25 shots in the game, but come away empty-handed, Kevin.
Well, the story of the game was giving up the goal late in the second period. There was a instance late in the period where Minnesota, all they needed to do was get the puck deep down into Carolina's end, and they could have made a line change and just burned off the rest of the period. But two attempts to get the puck into the Carolina zone did not work. Carolina got in the transition game and had a mini 2-on-1 and cashed it in and tied the game. And then third period, a shot on goal deflects off of a Carolina player's helmet and into the net, and that proved to be the difference. So, you know, it's just little things this time of year that are going to prove to be costly if you can't execute.
On Thursday night in Nashville, Connor Dewar scores the first goal of the game, and Minnesota off to a fast start, but two goals in the first, one in the second, and three in the third give Nashville the 6-1 victory. Gustafson stops 25 shots in that contest, and a very tough outing for him. A devastating loss on many levels, Kevin.
They could have really made a statement with the win in Nashville, and they just really, you know, it was commented by many that they just didn't even seem like they competed. It was just a real, real embarrassing showing for the team.
Two nights later, they travel to St. Louis, where they lose 3-1. St. Louis scores 6:34 into the contest. John Merrill gets that goal back 10 minutes into the second, but Jake Neighbors scores his 20th goal of the season to give St. Louis the lead for good. They add a goal with 49 seconds left, an empty net tally in the contest. Wind up dropping that game 3-1. They had a little bit better, actually a lot better goaltending. Marc-Andre Fleury stops 24 of 26 shots in this game. But St. Louis, you know, that's a team like, actually, you know, Nashville and St. Louis right there in front of you. I mean, you know, if you're looking at, like, who you definitely need to beat, St. Louis right there, 1 point ahead of them right, as you and I are talking tonight. Nashville was that team holding on to the eighth spot. Those are the teams you just have to beat right now.
It was a proverbial four-point game, and Minnesota just came up empty in both. And remember what I talked about last week. For as good as the Kaprizov, Boldy, and Eriksson Ekline was, remember I said they needed production from the other lines. Well, the only line that seemed to be cooking was Hartman, Duer, and Duhame in the Carolina game. And the top line dried up. There was no goals from Boldy, Eriksson Ek, or Kaprizov in the first three games of the week. And that ended up being three losses. But like I said, the other lines have to contribute, and right now we're not seeing it.
Well, that line does finally come alive on Sunday against San Jose. Didn't look good early on as the Sharks jump out to a 2-0 lead, scoring two goals in the second period, early in the second period, to take that advantage. Minnesota battles back to tie the game, with the fourth of the season for Frederick Gaudreau, and Kirill Kaprizov scoring his 27th of the season to tie the game. San Jose retakes the lead 23 seconds into the third, but Kaprizov closes out the hat trick with back-to-back goals, his 28th and 29th of the season, including the game winner with just under 4 minutes left in the contest. I mean, that's great. Your star came to play. And I mean, I'm not going to take anything away from that, because if they'd have lost that game to San Jose, I was literally over at that point. So, you know, he came up big for them when they needed him most.
Yeah, you know, that's what superstars do. But once again, like I said, Gaudreau's goal was on a power play. So 5-on-5, you got nothing out of your second, third, and fourth lines. Granted, there was a little bit of upheaval as they played a forward short on Sunday due to Matt Zuccarello having to leave the team for personal reasons for the game on Sunday afternoon, and Marcus Johansson was injured. So you only had 11 forwards to start with, but we got to start seeing something from the Matt Hartmans, the Marco Rossis, the Freddie Gaudreaus, and go on down, up and down the line. Though I do have to say, and this really went unnoticed by many, but on the first goal of the game for Kaprizov, just a tremendous pass from his own zone to San Jose's blue line from Shaw, who finally came back to, finally got a chance to get in the lineup. And it was good to see him back, and I was hoping that it was going to be a really nice story for Shaw coming back in the game against the Blues on Saturday, that maybe he would have had a goal and would have helped them win the game, but it was not meant to be. But he did help out with the assist on the Kaprizov goal, so good for Shaw, and maybe it will be something that can springboard the Wild because they need to get something going.
Kevin, let me ask you about the performance of Gustafsson in this game. Faced just 15 shots and gave up 3 goals. And you go, wow, that's a fairly disappointing night. But, you know, if some of those are just unbelievably, tough save to try to make, and nobody's going to save that. It doesn't matter how many shots they have on them in a night. You just have to save those. So is that 12-save performance a little misleading, or was that really a fairly tough night for Gustafsson?
John Hines addressed that in the post-game press conference, and those are the kind of games for a goalie where if you're not seeing much action, it's tough to really get into a zone. You know, you're going minutes without seeing a shot, then all of a sudden a guy's barreling down on a breakaway. And it's tough. It's tough for a goalie. Sometimes they need to see a lot of shots just to feel like they're in the flow of the game. So it's just one of those that you hope your goalie can work his way through it and give you a chance to win, and that's exactly what happened on Sunday.
Minnesota at 29, 27, and 6 in fifth place in the wild card standings, as I mentioned. They are 1 point behind both Calgary and St. Louis, 8 points behind Nashville. Get a chance to get a little revenge and try to do something against Nashville, Kevin, as they will take on the Arizona Coyotes on Thursday in Arizona, then travel to Colorado on Friday before returning home on Sunday to take on Nashville to begin a 3-game homestand. Do they return back Sunday, Kevin, and it's over for them? They're just out of the race at that point?
I'm not seeing a real good scenario unless this team can rattle off like 10 wins in a row where this team can get back into a playoff chase. Like I said, I was hoping the return of Mason Shaw was going to be the spark that really got this team going, but it really hasn't been thus far. But I'm just not seeing it. I just think the teams in front of them are playing too well where it's going to be hard to pass any of them. So at this point, you just want to see them play good hockey, and I think that's all they can do right now is just try to win as many games as he can and let the chips fall where they may. I guess maybe every game's going to be like playoffs for them at this point, but I just don't see a scenario where they're going to pass up Nashville and Los Angeles for a playoff spot.
Well, Kevin, believe it or not, there is an AHL team for the Minnesota Wild, and they have another tough week going 1-2. A lose on Wednesday at Grand Rapids 3-2, then have an opportunity to stay in Grand Rapids and do something, but they lose 4-3 on Friday, then travel to Milwaukee where they do come away with a 4-1 victory on Sunday. But now this team is in dead last, tied with Chicago with 43 points, still 1 point behind Manitoba. That's what I'm going to hang my hat on right now, because that last playoff spot is still up for grabs right now. And really, that's the only thing this team really, I think, has something to shine, feel like good about themselves about.
And the tricky part of that, though, is that Manitoba has 3 games on hand on the Wild right now. But the 2 games this weekend in Des Moines against Manitoba are just going to be humongous. And that, how they do in those 2 games are going to probably tell us whether they have a chance to get back into the playoff chase or not.
Well, let's begin with Wednesday. 3-2 loss to the Griffins in overtime. They do come away with a point out of the game. Grand Rapids scores 2 goals in the first period, scored 28 seconds apart. Iowa is able to battle back. Adam Roska scores his 3rd goal of the season in the first to cut the deficit in half there. Then Caden Bankier scores his 7th with a little under 5 minutes left in the second period. But with just under the 5-minute mark in overtime, Grand Rapids gets the game-winning goal. I'm sorry, napping there for a minute. Gets the game-winning goal. Jesper Wallstedt played pretty well in the game. Kevin stopped 35 shots, but unfortunately winds up being the tough luck loser.
Yeah, just a really fluky instance in that game, too, where Grand Rapids was able to get a faceoff in the Wild, and after a clearing attempt from the Wild, hit a hit a crowd mic hanging over the rink and caused the faceoff to go back into the Minnesota end instead of, I'm sorry, the Iowa end, as opposed to Iowa having a clear out and a chance to kill off the penalty. So, you still have to win the faceoff and make some plays to keep the puck out of your net, but just kind of a fluky instance there where they had to end up dealing with a faceoff in their own end.
On Friday night, is a 4-3 loss. Kevin Conley gets things started for Iowa when he scores his fifth of the season, 14-15 into the first. But Grand Rapids scores back-to-back goals, including 38 seconds after Conley's goal to tie the game. Elmer Soderblom scores with 2:44 left in the first to give Grand Rapids the lead. Iowa does battle back with a goal in the second to tie the game at 2 again. But two goals 10 minutes apart in the third give the Griffins a 4-2 advantage. Damon Hunt does score his second goal with about 39 seconds left in the game to cut the deficit to 1, but it was far too little too late at that point. Ballstead, who looked very good on Wednesday night, stops 19 of 23 shots here, and I'm not going to put that all on him because there were some very tough shots and he had a really very little chance on saving in. But the big deal about that is Grand Rapids with a 4-3 victory.
Yeah, just a tough two-game set in Van Andel Arena for the Wild, and you would like to at least see them get a split out of it, but it was not meant to be.
Why this team is such an enigma is they then travel to Milwaukee, the top team in the division, come away with a 4-1 victory. The teams exchange goals in the first, but then it is Iowa with three goals in the third. Adam Beckman with his 16th of the season on the power play gives Iowa the 2-1 lead. Then Stephen Fogarty scores two empty net goals 20 seconds apart in the final minute of the game. Ballstead with 22 saves on 23 shots against him. A 4-1 victory over the top team. You can see this team can win games, but just never seemed to figure it out, seems like to me.
Granted, Milwaukee has struggled a bit, but they're an awfully tough team to beat at home, so I thought this was a really big win for the Wild Club, and big goal by Adam Beckman, a guy that many in Minnesota are wondering if we're going to see him get a chance to shine after the trade deadline if a couple of players end up being moved. And then, two empty netters for Stephen Fogarty to pad his stats a bit, but overall, a good way for Iowa to end the road trip and feel good about themselves coming back home again.
Wild 19-30-5, Kevin. They, as I mentioned, 1 point behind Manitoba. They play the Moose twice this week at home. Those got to be regulation victories, and they got to win both those games.
Yeah, they definitely have to. Like I said, the Moose will have games on hand with them, so you win. If you win both games, you're at 47, they're at 44, and who knows what they do in those three games. And I didn't realize that, it kind of sneaks up on you because you're focusing on one team in one division, but when you look at the league standings, Iowa is next to last in the entire league right now with 40, or they're tied for last with 43 points. They are also tied for last in winning percentage with a 39.8%. So, let's just say it. I mean, the wheels have kind of come off this season, but yet there still is a chance in this division. If you get on a roll, you could get back into that chase again. So, you just hope that this will be a big weekend for Iowa and that will catapult them into some kind of a hot streak that we have not seen yet this year.
You talked about the division. Kevin, Bridgeport, which is the other team you're mentioning right there with 43 points, they are 17 points behind the fifth-place team. Now, mind you, I'll give a little something to there's an 8 teams in that division, but still, 17 points behind the fifth-place team to get that final playoff spot. The Wild, the same exact record as Bridgeport, are 1 point out of that fifth spot. So this Central Division has not been very good this year, that's for sure. Or more competitive.
Other than Texas and Milwaukee, it, it goes downhill pretty quick.
It's stunning, for sure. Well, Kevin, I had an interesting thought this week. Maybe it isn't interesting, but I'm just going to throw it out there. I'll be the first to admit, I was a huge Tim Army fan, you know, and really liked the job that he did with the Iowa Wild. The organization decided to go with a big change here with their AHL club. I don't see anything positive here that I go, wow, this move really drastically changed the direction this organization is going. Now, I get it. Injuries have gone on, and they haven't had the same kind of talent they got in. But if you looked at the season, do you feel like the coaching change has done anything to improve the culture or whatever that's going on with this club?
Well, we can't really say anything as far as the culture because, you know, we're not there in the locker room. We're not at practices, so we don't get to see it firsthand. But all we can really see from what you and I see are results, and the results are not there. You know, granted, I believe McLean coached under Tim Army one season in Iowa. So, you know, I don't know if anything he's doing is a polar opposite of what Tim Army did, or if it's just if he's using the more kid gloves approach with his team or what, but it would be interesting. I don't know what the move's going to be here. You know, McLean was somebody that Bill Guerin inherited from the previous regime. So could Guerin want Guerin and, to an extent, John Hines, would they want somebody different in Iowa next year that's more of, quote unquote, their guy? You know, so you have to wonder if Brett McLean will be back for another season at the helm in Iowa. So keep an eye on that. And, you know, there's going to be potentially a lot of talent turning pro from Minnesota's prospect system. So next year could be a pretty big year in Iowa, and I'm sure they want the right guy down there trying to work with these guys to get them up to the next level. So will it be Brett McLean? Will it be somebody else? We'll see.
And if you've been around hockey for a long time, like Kevin and I have been, you also get that probably the one sport more than any other where they will fire a coach for just no reason other than thinking that there needs to be a different voice that's being heard in the locker room. So a guy could be Stanley Cup champions one year and finding a new job the next. So it's just the way this works. And so I get Tim Army, they probably thought had reached he was taking the organization as far as he could take them, in their opinion, and they wanted a different voice down there. So we'll see if they want a different voice next year as well. Well, that leads us to the final club here for the organization, Kevin. A 4-3 victory for the Iowa Heartlanders on Friday in Indianapolis, winning in overtime. Then swept by Toledo in games where they were the offense just shut down by these Walleye, who are very good. So 1-2 week for the Heartlanders.
I think it's about what we expected. And really, maybe the expectations were going to be them losing all three games, but they did manage to get a big shootout win in Friday in Indianapolis, where they seem to be enjoying a little bit of success now. But, you know, Toledo's just the cream of the crop in the UCHL right now, and the Heartlanders just did not have an answer for them, only scoring one goal in two games over the weekend, being outscored 7-1.
Casey Dornbach and Ben Brinkman score in the first period of Friday night's game to give Iowa 2-1 lead. The Fuel able to tie the score before Jake Durfelinger scores his 7th goal of the season with a little under 2 minutes left in the second, putting Iowa back on top, but a Christopher Cameron goal with just over 9 minutes left in the game sends this contest overtime. Then it is Iowa scoring twice in their three rounds in the shootout to come away with a 3-2 victory. Another fine performance by Drew DeRitter out there. He stops 42 of 45 shots. 45 shots. I think that is absolutely absurd. But he comes away with a big victory out there. So DeRitter, and this organization has some very interesting decisions to make their goaltending for next year. And somebody's going to be very happy with Drew DeRitter if he's their number one goalie somewhere in minor league hockey next year.
You know, from top to bottom, it's going to be interesting. You know, you go back to Minnesota, and the talk up there now is, does Marc-Andre Fleury possibly play another year to give Jesper Wallstedt a chance to get another full season in Iowa, as they feel like maybe Wallstedt's not quite ready for the NHL yet? And, you know, the Michael Russo of The Athletic was also opining that he thinks that Wallstedt should get a bunch of starts with Minnesota at the end of the season just to, as a little bit of a dress rehearsal. So if Wallstedt's back in Iowa, then, you know, then we're looking at probably a log jam of goalies once again in the, between the Iowa Wild and the Heartlanders. But if Wallstedt's ready for the NHL, you know, it opens up a spot with Iowa Wild, and then maybe we see one of the two Joneses and DeRitter as the two goalies for the Heartlanders next year.
On Saturday, a 4-1 loss in Toledo. 1-0 Toledo after second period when Trenton Bliss scores his 19th goal of the season. The Walleye score two goals early in the third. Yuki Miura scores his 10th goal of the season to cut the deficit to two, but Riley McCourt with an empty net goal to seal the victory. It is Peyton Jones getting the start in this game. He stops 25 of 28 shots. Hunter Jones was dressed for this contest, did not play in any of the three games this weekend, Kevin. I wonder if that's kind of a signal to him that his time with the Wild organization is coming to a quick end.
You know, it's hard to say. I don't know offhand what kind of a contract he's on, if he's going to be a free agent after this year or not. But the guy was a second-round pick, and generally you don't want to give up on them too quick. So we'll see what happens come summertime.
On the Sunday game, Toledo scores twice in the first. It is Trenton Bliss with two more goals in this game. He had two on Saturday night. Riley Sawchuk. Is related to the Terry Sawchuk, or is that just coincidence?
Well, I don't have the Sawchuk family tree in front of me right now, so I don't have an answer for you there.
Man, I thought you always had that on you right there. Drew DeRitter with 26 saves. That was a good one, Kevin. 26 saves in the game. Played very well, but what are you going to do? I mean, your team didn't score. You're not going to do it. You're not going to win games like that. So 3-0 loss for the club out there. This week, Kevin, the team will travel to Wichita for games on Friday and Saturday. I will unfortunately not be able to make that, as I will be in St. Louis for my grandson's hockey tournament. As you and I are talking here tonight, I got to get my standings. I had them here a minute ago. There we go. Iowa in last place, 51 points, 4 points behind Cincinnati right now, 22, 26, and 7 so far for the Heartlanders this season, Kevin.
You know, it's just every week, you know, we have to say something, but it just seems like it's kind of a broken record that they're just, at this point, you're 10 points out of the playoff spot with, I believe, 17 games left to play. So the math just doesn't work out very good right now for this team to make a playoff run. But I think the goal still is, you know, you try to get back to hockey 500, where you at least can go in the offseason and boast that you're a 500 team.
Well, Kevin, let's go around the NHL and talk about some other stuff. Trade deadline coming up. Who do you think is going to be on the move that's going to be a blockbuster move for somebody?
You know, from watching shows, you hear about a guy like Vladimir Tarasenko with Ottawa right now, that he could be a guy that could be a spark plug for a team. Keeping it more local, it sounds like Brandon Duhame, who's going to be a unrestricted free agent come summertime, is someone that could fetch some a quality player or quality prospect for the Wild, either a draft pick or someone in someone's minor league system and draft pick. Who knows? We've seen teams way overpay come trade deadline. Sounds like Connor Dewar is also another guy that Minnesota could be looking at moving, as he will be a restricted free agent. And with a bunch of prospects all coming in, hard to say where Dewar's place with Minnesota is. And, you know, we forgot to mention that the guy we talked about last week, Murat Khusnatdinov, did sign with Minnesota and is working on his getting a visa to play in the U.S. Sounds like that could be a week away yet. But Khusnatdinov will be a guy that is going to get a pretty good look at the end of the season, too. So, you know, with the Wild, it's hard to move a lot of these guys right now just because they're on these long-term deals or there are deals with no trade clauses. So I don't think locally we're going to see a lot of moves, and it's hard to say around the NHL. There's not really a huge name that pops out right now as somebody that could be on the move that's being shopped around. I would look for Dallas to try to make a big splash if there is that game-breaker kind of guy out there, because you got a couple guys right now with Maverick Bork and Logan Sankova that just don't have a spot with the Stars right now. And you got to imagine for the right player, they would be willing to move those guys along.
I just want to point out, if you had Khusnatdinov's name in Scrabble, you probably hit across at least two or three triple word scores somewhere along there. So,
well, yeah, just seeing the V alone is going to get you bank.
Kevin, what about the Florida Panthers jumping to the top record in the NHL right now? 9-1 in their last 10. You know, I thought this was kind of a nice team early on in the season. They were playing pretty tough, but not anything spectacular. But wow, I mean, 12 games over 500 at home, 13 games over 500 on the road. This team looks really legitimate and getting very good goaltending.
But could it be the same situation? Could Florida be a victim of what they feasted on last year? Could it be that Florida's going to shoot their load in the regular season, becoming the top team in the league, and then get knocked off in the playoffs? So you have to wonder if, you know, they played way, obviously played in the cup finals last year, they played way into June. I mean, could fatigue set in at some point with this team? I think you need to watch out for that.
And I think what would be a terrible matchup for them in the first round is if they had Tampa Bay, veteran club who knows how to win, plus huge rivalry. If they wind up having Tampa Bay, I think they seriously get bounced.
Well, there's a chance of just because of the rivalry alone, but Tampa Bay doesn't scare me as much as it once did.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Goaltending is just not what they once were either. You know, speaking of kind of shooting your load out there, Kevin, I thought, boy, Edmonton had that big 16-game winning streak, and then we're just kind of okay, but bounce back and really starting to play again, four victories in a row for this club right now. They probably will not catch Vancouver for the top record in here, but I think this might be the scariest club in the West.
I think so, too. It just seems like there's a lot more depth to the team than what we saw last year, but I think the key for them is, you know, who's going to be your guy between the pipes come playoffs, because it seems like Calvin Pickard is starting to pick up some starts and looking pretty good in it. So can Stuart Skinner be a number one playoff guy? You know, neither one of those guys really look like guys that could take it and run with it. So it'll be interesting to see if Edmonton is the number one overall team. We'll see how the goaltending holds up for them, because they definitely got the offense to make a long run.
Nashville with 8 wins in a row. Is that a mirage that this team is really that good?
I don't think so. I was really surprised that they sold last year as much as they did at the deadline, because I really like the club, and they still made a pretty decent run at the playoffs, even with a depleted team. But I think that experience bolstered them this year into success. And I mean, we're seeing it with their AHL team too, where this is a really good, there's a lot of quality players up and down the entire organization at this point. So I'm really not surprised that they're making the run that they are.
Now, I know that you're not one to shy away from the potential conspiracy talk. So a good friend of mine, I would say, well, wow, if San Jose winds up having the most balls in the drafting, I asked him, do you think that they come away with the top pick? And my friend said, Rob, there's no way that the NHL is going to let San Jose have the top pick. It's going to be Chicago again regardless, because they really, that's the big market. They want that. Is that too conspiracy-like, Kevin, or could you see that being the reality?
Oh, I totally agree with it. Totally agree.
Sad.
I think the
poor Sharks.
Even though with all the stuff that happened in Chicago with the investigation of what they found with the former video coach and what the Blackhawks had to do to get their image back in the eyes of the paying public, I just got a feeling the NHL still wants them to be a premier team in the league, and I can see where the lot of balls will once again be in the favor of the Blackhawks.
Fantastic. Kevin Lukel, thanks again for joining me this week.
My pleasure as always.